It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good Monday morning to you. It is, of course, Monday, as I've just mentioned, and it's the 14th of October, 2024. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. We're here with you for the next 3 hours, hopefully keeping you informed, keeping you entertained and hearing your points of view and the topics that are important to you. Our lines are open. The numbers are familiar, but people are tuning in all the time, so I'll remind you that the WhatsApp and the text number, it's 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. If you're outside the Republic, 00 353 86 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, we're mad to hear from you, 07491 25000. And don't forget, you can email comments at highlandradio.com, and particularly if you're listening to the podcast or if you're listening to the replay overnight, the phones aren't necessarily there to be answered, but we'd love to hear from you, and you can jot down an email, send it on to us, so we can include it in the next broadcast. And just that daily reminder for you that we are streaming the show live for you to watch if it suits you. If you're at home, you can watch us on your smart screen TV or your Fire Stick on the YouTube app. Just search Highland Radio Ireland. We're out and about on that app as well too. And we're on Facebook, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries. And by the way, just with the addition to the obituary notices to that Facebook page, it's just another way to make sure that the information, the important information, is gotten out to as many people as possible. So if you don't subscribe to that page, it's no harm to do so. It's just really news, sport and obituary notices. There's very little else there other than this show being streamed and what have you. But it just means it brings that straight into the palm of your hand, that information, and you can click through and get your information. And one thing I've noticed as well too, it's an opportunity for people to offer condolences or pay respects as well. So that's another feature there on that Facebook page, Highland Radio News, Sport and now also obituary notices. And of course we have the Highland Hub page as well, which allows us to share various different pieces of information and competitions with you. Right, let's have a look at the newspapers this morning because we have a lot to get through on air. We'll start with the Derry People Donegal News. Kyle remembered as a gentle soul. The heartbroken partner of Kyle McDermott told mourners at his Requiem Mass yesterday that his gentle soul was too much for this world. Chloe McGonagall bravely paid tribute to Mr. McDermott, pictured right, just before his funeral concluded yesterday in St. Angus Church in Burt, describing him as her best friend and as someone who cared deeply for everyone in his life. Hundreds of mourners packed into the church while many more stood outside in the cold October air to bid an emotional farewell to Mr. McDermott, whom it was heard idolised his family and passed in such tragic circumstances. And our thoughts with his partner and family, friends and the wider community as well. The Derry News reports of shock as man arrested following city centre stabbing. Police investigating a report of a stabbing incident at the Fall Street area of Derry on Sunday have arrested a man. Shortly after 1:40 a.m. it was reported that a 27-year-old man had been stabbed a number of times by another man inside a shop in the area. He was taken to hospital for injuries to his left shoulder and lower back that were not believed to be life-threatening. The male made off on foot following the incident towards the Shipkey Street area. A 24-year-old man was later arrested on suspicion of wounding with intent to do grievous bodily harm, possession of an offensive weapon with intent to commit an indictable offence, and theft. Inquiries are continuing at this stage, we hear. On to the national newspapers today, and again, it is Sinn Féin that are dominating the headlines in all of the papers. The story impossible to avoid. Stanley quit Sinn Féin after gross misconduct allegation. A Sinn Féin internal inquiry into allegations against TD Brian Stanley had reached a preliminary conclusion of gross misconduct against him before he resigned from the party on Saturday night. Mr. Stanley has fiercely contested the conduct of the inquiry, suggesting it resembles a type of kangaroo court. This is information he released in his own press statement. The Irish Times understands that the inquiry, instituted after a complaint about Mr. Stanley, had concluded that the complaint made about him was true, that he had breached Sinn Féin's ethics code and made a finding of gross misconduct against him. Draft findings were circulated to the parties to the parties to the process last week, and they were invited to make comments or submissions before the inquiry made its final recommendations. However, that process has now been interrupted by Mr. Stanley's resignation. In a statement issued yesterday afternoon, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald said the issue has been passed to An Gada Síochána. Now, this does raise questions as to why it was passed to An Gada Síochána at this point. You know, we do have a system here. You know, we have the Gardaí, we have the DPP, and we have the courts. This appears to be, you know, a Sinn Féin process, then the Gardaí, then the DPP, and then the courts. I'm sure, and I heard some of Mary Lou McDonald earlier on today saying that that was not the case, that they forwarded onto An Gada Síochána through an abundance of caution. But I suppose, why now? Why after his resignation? Why not when the information first transpired? News of Mr. Stanley's resignation late on Saturday evening was greeted with shock inside and outside Sinn Féin. As chairman of the powerful Public Accounts Committee, he was one of the party's best-known TDs and was especially prominent during hearings into the RTE scandals. His statement of resignation was scathing about the inquiry process. In recent months, a certain clique within the party have gone to extreme lengths to damage my reputation and character. No efforts have been spared by them in this regard, he said. On foot of a complaint, which he puts in inverted commas, I was recently brought before an internal party inquiry. Given what has transpired and the work of my legal team, what is very clear in this process that it lacked objectivity, was seriously flawed and was devoid of impartiality. As I say, that's just one of the stories, but they're all over the place. They're all over the papers today. A story from Ukraine in the Irish Independent today, and a different angle on this is because, you know, maybe we don't necessarily sometimes look on as to what's happening over there as a war. Maybe we kind of, you know, prioritise maybe the housing or dealing with those that are fleeing the war, or maybe our attention now is turned to the Middle East. But what is ongoing over there is a war. And a meat grinder to some extent, in that there are young men, mostly both Russian and Ukraine, every hour of every minute, every minute of every hour of every day, battling out and dying in huge numbers, hundreds of thousands at this stage. And it's just a word about the conscription process that's ongoing in Ukraine, because as I say, it's not just something that's aired that much and not a reality that we face. But Ukrainian military recruiters launched targeted raids at local restaurants, shopping centres and rock concerts over the weekend, detaining men and press ganging them into the army. "Get away from me," one concertgoer shouted at three policemen as they pulled him towards a recruiting desk that had been set up outside the place of sports where Ukrainian rock band Okean Elzy had been playing at the weekend. The man's face contorted in fear as he strained and pulled against the policeman. Video footage showed several women filmed the policeman on their smartphones and shouted, "Shame, shame on you." Policemen also waited to intercept men at Good Wine, a nearby shopping centre, and Avalon, a popular restaurant, according to reports. Eyewitnesses said the police checked all the men's documents. Men who refused to show documents exempting them from military service or whose documents were considered faulty were dragged away. Under Ukraine's martial law, all men between the age of 25 and 60 are eligible for the army. Men between the ages of 18 and 60 are also banned from leaving the country. Facing a severe shortage of soldiers, Ukraine reduced the mobilization age to 25 from 27 and scrapped the only partially eligible loophole back in April. Punishment was also stiffened for men who didn't show up at their summons. As I say, it's just, it happens and it's been happening all the time. It's just I don't think people think about that very much, that yeah, you know, young Ukrainian men, same as your sons or grandsons or what have you, go into a nightclub and getting dragged and forced to head to the front lines, so to speak. And one quoted saying, "Mobilisation is seen as a one-way ticket where the only way to end service is to die or become disabled." And on it goes. The Irish Daily Mail this morning: 1 in 10 GPs in this country, Ireland, have chosen to provide early medical abortion, new research shows. GPs spoke of dealing with conscience and challenges and protests in the rollout of abortion services in a new study, but said their overall experience has been positive. At a time when America has seen a string of post-Roe abortion bans, approximately 10% of GPs in the new University of College Cork study, who had their anonymity protected, explained their moral reasoning and personal experiences in providing the care. One GP, referred to as Dr. C, explained the link between their political campaigning role and the decision to provide abortion care. They said, "I was very struck by it. I didn't become a provider. What I had it all been about. You owe this service to your patients. It's all the right thing to do. If I didn't actually live that myself, I would just be a big fraud." That's what one Dr. C said. Private consultants, this is the Daily Star this morning. Private consultants hired by the HSC to improve hospital productivity. They're being paid €1,499. Do you think it's per month? Do you think it's per day, per week? No, it's per day. It was reported that the director of an 8-strong team of management experts from Ernst & Young, Dr. Mary Coughlin, receives that daily rate. That's €1,449, and her job is to improve hospital productivity. The Sunday Independent also said two others in the team are on a measly €1,189 each day, despite a pledge by HSE bosses to clamp down on spending on management consultants. So three of them earning, close on $5,000, this to improve hospital productivity. What are the key performance indicators there to say they're either doing the job correctly or not? Dr. Coughlin is a partner at EY and former actuary, who's also a qualified doctor. Analysis has revealed the government paid at least $818 million to the five biggest management consultant firms between 2018 and last year. Just as another story to the right of this, it's a remarkable achievement by man, really. And by man, I mean by man and women, you know what I'm saying. SpaceX pulled off its boldest test flight yet at the giant Starship rocket, catching the returning booster back at launch pad with mechanical arms. If you haven't seen the videos of this, it's like science fiction. It's well worth checking out. Towering at almost 400 feet, the empty spacecraft blasted off at sunrise from the southern tip of Texas. Now, Elon Musk believes that he can do this and launch every hour because he's determined to repopulate another planet. And they thought it would take ages to get this right, but this massive 400-foot lump of metal came down, back down from lower space, effectively, the high atmosphere, and was picked up effectively by two big floating chopsticks. And remarkable. I think it exceeded their own expectations. They knew they possibly could, but I don't think they believed they could do it first time out. Top officials, including at least one cabinet minister, were told an Irish politician had been recruited as a Russian agent at least 5 years ago, it's emerged. This is The Sun. Senior civil servants and top security and defence officials, as well as one minister, were briefed after the agent, codenamed Cobalt, was uncovered in 2018. There were photographs presented in the briefings of the person arriving on a flight into Dublin with Russian intelligence officers, as well as holding meetings in hotels and restaurants. The Sunday Times reported that top secret memos about the matter were circulated among branches of government on a need-to-know basis. Yet still the person's identity remains a mystery, shrouded in secret. And I know many of you out there are dog lovers, and I know for many of you this is a nightmare time of the year. This is focusing on dog lovers, but there are many others that aren't actually dogs, that are real, that are humans, that are affected by this. So while the nation's children are looking forward to Halloween, it's the scariest time of the year for the country's pets. Dog Trust Ireland is highlighting that the festival may not be a happy time for pets and wildlife. The warning comes after a recent study of dog owners revealed that 37% of their pets struggle to stay calm when fireworks can be heard. I would have thought it was higher, but anyway. With dogs hearing around four times more sensitive than hearings, sorry, with dogs hearing around four times more sensitive than humans, experts say it's not surprising that they're terrified by the noise of fireworks. Almost half of those who took part in the study also noted that their dog struggles to stay quiet when someone is at the door or there is noise coming from outside, which is often the case when trick-or-treaters come calling. So for many of you out there, maybe this is a nightmare period. Now, as we revealed on the show towards the end of last week, a number of soldiers based in Donegal are the next to be sent to South Lebanon. The 125th Infantry Battalion is due to head over there, we believe, to be in November. So we checked with the Defence Forces just to absolutely be sure of it, though we were sure of it. And the response is that the Defence Forces can confirm that 66 personnel from Donegal are travelling to South Lebanon with the 125th Infantry Battalion. The rotation remains on schedule as planned at this time. Now, we've heard of United Nations peacekeepers being injured recently, none of them Irish, but injured nonetheless. Also, some of the language being used by Israel last week was not very favourable towards the peacekeepers. And I just note this morning that that language has hardened somewhat, because the Israeli Energy Minister, Eli Cohen, accused the United Nations UNIFIL peacekeepers in South Lebanon of being a useless force that failed to protect Israelis from Hezbollah attacks and called on it to withdraw as fighting ramps on. The State of Israel will do everything to ensure the safety of its citizens, and if the UN cannot help, at least it should not interfere and move its personnel from the combat zones, he said. Israel and the United Nations have been trading accusations over the peacekeepers in South Lebanon as Israel pushes its forces through the area in an attempt to wipe out Iran-backed Hezbollah and its military infrastructure. But at the moment, they're staying there, and at the moment, more soldiers from Donegal due to go over there. Independent Senator Tom Clonan joins me on the programme now. Good morning to you, Senator. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Right, what's your view? You've been speaking about this. Do you believe they should be pulled out? Do you believe they should stay?
So there's a couple of levels to this. First of all, the Irish troops are there as part of a multinational force. So 10,000 troops from 50 different nations, including, you know, over 1,000 troops from Italy, French troops, troops from all over the world. And so Ireland can't really unilaterally withdraw our people, because it would send a very negative signal about our faith and confidence in the United Nations. And, you know, we've been continuously on UN service since 1958, so a very long time. So that's the first level. The second point I would make is that the Irish position, which probably your listeners have heard about, 6-52, which is on the border, the blue line with Israel, near Marun al-Raz, that little village, that has at one point was surrounded by Israeli armour, and they were pointing their main armaments, that's a big 120mm cannon on the Merkava tanks, they were pointing that and aiming it directly into the post. You know, that is threatening, and I think President Higgins was correct in that formula of words, that it was threatening Irish UN peacekeepers. So those 33 personnel are still in that post. They haven't been what's called relieved in place. So there is, I think, a requirement, and the Defence Forces have confirmed they're working on that, to get out to them safely and rotate those 33 people back in so that they can have showers, they can change out of their combats, get fresh clothes and eat some fresh food and some hot food. The UNIFIL headquarters in Nakura, which is 50 kilometres to the west of where the Irish are on the border, on the Mediterranean coastline, and we have Irish troops in Nakura, which is UN headquarters. They may decide in the coming days to redeploy some of the forces. They may pull them in from some of the more exposed places. So there are, all those options are open to them. But really, Netanyahu has come out and has said that the UN must evacuate, get out of there. So what Netanyahu is doing is he's literally at gunpoint telling the UN to get out, telling the international community to leave so that he can do whatever he wants in Lebanon, which is what he did in Gaza, which is to destroy and slaughter, because they did not make any distinction between Hamas and innocent Palestinians in Gaza. They killed 42,000 people and climbing. They've killed over 2,000 Lebanese. They do not distinguish between innocent Lebanese villagers and people in Beirut and Hezbollah. So, you know, there should now be a major diplomatic pushback on Israel. Cannot be allowed, in my view, to demand that this multinational force, 50 different countries, that they leave at gunpoint.
Well, it's not just that. It's also the criticism of them. They're saying they're being used by Hezbollah. They are saying that they... I heard an interview last week where it was effectively said, though it wasn't said directly, that they stood idly by while Hezbollah were able to strengthen their positions, dig tunnels and what have you. And another senior Israeli spokesperson described them as useless. So the language is very pointed towards them as well.
Yeah, and for sure, Hezbollah, like the Israelis, they don't respect the laws of international conflict. They don't respect the Geneva Conventions. They murdered Private Sean Rooney in December 22. And if you look at Ireland's casualties over the last 50 years in Lebanon, because we have been there since 1978, you know, 50% of our casualties were inflicted by groups like Hezbollah and other Islamic resistance groups, and the other half by Israel and its paramilitary proxies. So that shows that we are literally in the middle as human shields between the belligerents, Hezbollah on the one side, mm-hmm. and the Israelis on the other. And our mission is to try and protect civilian life, the protection of civilians.
But that job is beyond us now. Even UNIFIL spokesperson Andrea Tenenti didn't frame it as such, to protect innocent civilians. Although I suppose you could say, in doing what I'm going to say next, they are doing that. But it's important, he said, it's important they stay there to be able to report to the Security Council. But aren't we past that now at this stage? Is their function in this role at this time now too dangerous and they should be pulled out? Or is that conceding too much, say, for instance, to Israel, who some would feel
We're not at that point yet. I mean, I've been there as an army officer myself, and I've been in a position in 96 during the Israeli operation Grapes of Wrath. I've been under direct and indirect fire from the Israelis. I know what that's like. But even at the worst moments of that, we were able to help the local population, because not every Lebanese villager can flee. You know, disabled people, the elderly, young women nursing infants whose husbands are working in Cote d'Ivoire, or, you know, Sierra Leone, the Lebanese have a huge diaspora. Those women can't go unescorted, unaccompanied, unchaperoned. Like, people don't understand. There are people trapped in this who will be murdered by the Israelis. So back in 96, we were able to take them onto our position. We took 200, the most vulnerable people and the most frightened people you've ever seen. We took them onto our post at Aliaton. And our neighbouring UN position at Qana, they took a similar number on. But they were targeted by the Israelis, and 106 innocent men, women and children were butchered in April 1996 by the Israelis. But that, in turn, prompted the Clinton administration to broker a ceasefire between Hezbollah and the Israelis. Mm-hmm. So look, it's war, it's chaos, it's the squalid reality of what Netanyahu and Sheikh Nasrallah, now dead, that's their grand design, is toxic leadership, toxic masculinity. Let's shoot our way to peace. And absolutely, there has to be a political solution to this. But can you imagine now the villagers who are struck in places like Tyre and Sidon and all throughout South Lebanon? If they saw the UN pull down their blue flags and 50 nations pack up and leave, they know then it's all over for them, that the Israelis will slaughter them as they have in Gaza. And I know that I'm using language that is very strong. You might say it's tabloid, but that is exactly what they've done in Gaza, and that is exactly what they intend for Lebanon.
Yeah, in a previous interview, I hope you weren't misquoted, but you said that that we're effective. Our peacekeepers are over there are effectively not safe.
Human shields,
and that's what seemed quite obvious to me as well, and observers. But you still believe there's a role beyond that that justifies their placement there?
Yeah, well, in Gaza, one of the problems that the international community had was that there was no international presence in Gaza. Just some brave Palestinian journalists, you know, dozens and dozens of whom were murdered by the Israelis. We did have some international aid agencies, but they were pushed right out to the border. And the Israelis fired on international aid workers, killing them. So we didn't have the eyes and ears of the international community witnessing, recording, observing, reporting the actions of Hamas, who are in breach of the laws of armed conflict, and the Israelis. And so Israel has been able to do what it has done. The international community have permitted Israel to do what... Like Benjamin Netanyahu is a man who's out of control. His ultimate objective is to provoke a full-scale war with Iran, because they have this ideology and doctrine about, you know, taking the Iranian regime out before it goes nuclear, and they need the United States to assist them in that. And in part, they've achieved that because the Americans have now deployed for the first time U.S. troops to Israeli soil to man anti-missile batteries. This is terminal high-altitude air defense systems, or TADs. They haven't done that before. They're now in Israel. They're being drawn into this war.
Can I ask, Netanyahu
will use the next 4 weeks in the run-up to the presidential election in the U.S. This is a moment of weakness for the states. He's a lame-duck president through no fault of his own. So this is the situation we find ourselves. But I would say to the families and those who are going out, the number one priority for UNIFIL, for the Irish, for the general staff, for the chief of staff, for the minister, is the protection and safety of our troops, which are right, they're not safe, they're in harm's way. All we can do is try and mitigate that risk.
I mean, obviously, Israel is quite isolated in this region. 9 million, I think the population is circa 9 million. How is it, in your experience, because you talked earlier on about the Americans being able to broker peace in the past or broker a ceasefire at the very least. Why in your view, are they, given their scale, why do you believe they are so powerful? I understand they're exploiting that political vacuum in America at the moment, right? But that being said, they seem to be able to do whatever they want to do. And it seems also whatever they decide to do in Iran, the Americans are to some extent going to have to back it. Now, I know the US don't want them attacking the any nuclear infrastructure, what have you, but why, in your view, why is Israel so powerful? How can it wield such power that it can do whatever it likes and can effectively threaten UN troops and get away with it? Why so?
Well, we've traditionally supported Israel, and myself included, absolutely recognise the right of Israel to exist and for Israel to defend itself. What I don't believe is that Israel should be able to act as a rogue state and break international law in order to do so. They have an incredibly powerful lobby in the United States. And like ourselves, they use their diaspora. And this is all legitimate. It's not a conspiracy theory. Like, the Israelis have been very effective at mobilizing their diaspora in the United States. And the Democrats rely to a great extent on that support to try and get Kamala Harris over the line. And I completely understand that and appreciate that. So they have the United States in something of a headlock here as they approach these elections. And if, depending on the outcome, if we do have a Trump presidency, Netanyahu will then be free to do as he wishes and provoke that conflict with Iran. Trump has been very critical, very vocal in his criticism of the Iranian regime and the Chinese. So that's the confrontation that Netanyahu seeks. As for the Israelis themselves, you couldn't meet better people. They're the most wonderful people, but they, like the unfortunate Lebanese people, they have a toxic leadership at the moment.
He's well and they're supported, kind of trapped though, by that. In fairness, he's well supported as well, and it's not just he's supported by other parties who have quite a lot of public support as well. So they're not like, it's not a dictatorship. They're not rebels necessarily going against the will of their people.
No, it's a parliamentary democracy, but they have been traumatized. And they have had Hezbollah and Hamas fire barrage after barrage of missiles at civilian targets. It's not reported in the Irish media. Mm. Well, not much, but they hit a town called Benyamin yesterday and injured over 40 Israeli civilians. And what has been reported is the successful Hezbollah drone strike on a military base south of Haifa, where they killed 4 IDF soldiers and injured 7. So It's the aggression, but it's all violence is cyclical. This all goes back to the reluctance of successive Israeli governments to really work towards the two-state solution, which is part of the solving this problem in the Middle East.
But very finally as well, obviously there's guns and bombs and bullets, but Dana Ehrlich was really quite pointed in her commentary in Ireland, saying we are not. Neutral in this. We're seen as anti-Israel, we're pro-Palestinian, and that this is going to have an impact on our economy because they're being inundated with investors in Ireland looking to invest their money elsewhere, and big tech also wondering, is it time for them to pull out of here because people don't want to come here and work? Is that just rhetoric?
Absolutely. It's propaganda. Like, by definition, any government official communication is propaganda. And, Dana Ehrlich, she should come here, come back and resume her post as ambassador and engage. And, let's sit down and challenge each other's perspectives. It was the previous Israeli ambassador, Ruth Katz, I sat down with her as Irish Times security analyst, and she told me, you know, oh, despite what the Nazis did and the Holocaust, there has never been a retaliation by Israel against Germany. And she said, you know why that is? She said, it's because we can distinguish between Germans and Nazis. But unfortunately, what's happening at the moment is that the Israelis are not distinguishing between ordinary Gazans, Palestinians, and Hamas, and nor are they distinguishing between ordinary Lebanese and Hezbollah. And that is ethno-racially driven. They call Palestinians, members of Netanyahu's cabinet have called Palestinians human animals. Now, we're quite right to criticize Vladimir Putin and his criminal invasion of Ukraine. And also, Israel must be held to account. And by criticizing Israeli foreign policy or criticizing their actions in Gaza is not to be anti-Semitic at all. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I support Israel's right to exist, their right to defend themselves, but not to slaughter 42,000 Gazans, 20,000 of whom are women and children. That's femicide. That's infanticide. It's, you know, we're living at a time where I'm proud to see our Taoiseach and our Taoiseach to be very clear about this. Micheál Martin said, you cannot destroy a people in order to dismantle an organization like Hamas or Hezbollah.
All right.
And that's, you know, I think we have moral leadership and moral authority in that regard.
Senator Tom Clonan, thanks very much for your time as an independent senator there. I do appreciate it. Some of your comments coming in. So Ireland, not a neutral country now. Well, that would be the view of Dana Ehrlich. Anyway, a caller says Irish peacekeepers should not have to go over to Lebanon as Israel will not stop until they get what they want. This war could go on for 10 years. Another, no good talking about, no good talking. The countries that are backing Israel need to stop now. This is getting out of hand and thousands of lives are going to and have been, in fact, lost. As a wife, this is a completely different perspective and an interesting insight. As the wife of an army officer, we trust that the Defence Forces know what they're doing. After all, they are there since 1970. It's what our soldiers trained for. My husband has no issue with going. Our soldiers are peacekeepers. They're not sent over there to be killed. People are being traumatic about this for no reason. He's in constant contact with friends there at the minute and has no concerns about himself going over. Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, Michael, thank you very much for holding. I do appreciate it. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig.
Michael, you take a different angle, do you, from the senator who we were just listening to?
Yeah, I was just listening to the senator there now, and I would say he's definitely pro-Palestinian. But the first question I would ask is, has Israel not got the right to defend itself? Mm-hmm. And the second topic that I'll bring up is, when I served in the Lebanon, there was a comrade of mine, Private Kevin Joyce from the Iron Islands, and it was Private Doherty from Fort. Kevin Joyce was abducted. His body was never found. As we know, Private Doherty came home and he's buried down in Fort. It wasn't Israelis that killed him, mm-hmm. or them. It wasn't Israelis that abducted Kevin Joyce. It was Palestinian factions, now Hamas, Hezbollah, they're all the same. Nobody seemed to bring this up at all. You know, but Kevin Joyce was, I think Kevin Joyce was about 25 years of age, and I was 6 months with him, and his body, they didn't even give up his body. Mm-hmm. But they don't seem to bring this up. It wasn't Israelis that killed the Irish soldiers. I don't think the Irish soldiers have anything to fear from the Israeli, or the IDF as they call them, the Israeli army. I don't think they've been, because I think the Israelis have had good time for the Irish soldiers.
Just in relation, we can come back to that, but just in relation to Israel's right to defend itself, and I think most people would agree, and especially after, it wasn't the start of the conflict and the death and the murder, but certainly going back to October of last year, I don't think any right-minded individual would have criticised Israel for a response. But do you not think, effectively, the destruction of Gaza almost in its entirety and the loss of life of civilians, and now we're starting to see the same in Lebanon, do you not think that is an overreach, that's going beyond defending oneself. That's actually really trying to wipe out whomever may be responsible. And who cares if innocent women and children get in the way? Like, do you believe the extent of the Israeli response to October is justified?
Well, Israel has to defend themselves, number one. And number two, call it overreach or whatever, but any time there has been a ceasefire, it's been initiated by Israel. Hezbollah or Hamas, they do not want a ceasefire. Or Iran, they do not want a ceasefire. They want to keep going. And Israel has to continuously defend themselves. You were only getting, the media is only looking at one side. They're not looking at the two sides. Do you really think, or anybody really thinks, that there's really people want to be at war all the time? They do not. But they want, at the same time, they want to feel safe within the region that they live in, Israel as a country. The Palestinians don't recognise Israel as a country. When they chant from the river to the sea, it's to exterminate all Israelis. And that's what it's about.
Do you think Israel has not, for generations now, effectively been trying to take the land occupied by Palestinians back bits and pieces at a time, making their life there unbearable to the point that they flee, and then it is actually Israel from the river to the sea? Or do you believe Israel is to stay within its borders and live peacefully with the Palestinians between it and the sea?
Israel pulled out of Gaza. They even pulled all the Israeli people out of Gaza and let the Palestinians govern themselves there. But all they done, when they got billions and billions and billions of dollars, was build underground tunnels to initiate war on Israel. You know, let's just call a spade here. And that's exactly what happened. They weren't helping their own people. You know, if all them billions of dollars that went into Gaza was used for the people of Gaza, Gaza would be flourishing now at the moment.
But you would know that Israel controlled imports, exports. They controlled the flow of water, the flow of electricity into Palestine. I think most international observers would have concluded or agreed that for generations living in Gaza, you were effectively living in an open prison. I mean, can we judge all Palestinians for the actions of Hezbollah the same as can we judge all of Israel for the actions of Netanyahu and his regime? There has to be respect for innocence.
Oh, of course, yeah. And nobody wants to see anybody dying. Nobody wants conflict. Nobody wants conflict. Nobody wants war. But the bottom line is Israel has to defend itself. There's 79 million people, Israelis, out there in Israel at the minute, and they're surrounded by so many different factions, so many hostile countries against them, that they have to defend themselves. And they have a right to defend themselves. Okay. And anybody says that they haven't a right to defend themselves, well, That's the serious problem.
Now, you served over there previously. Yeah. And it's clear you're through your experience, you're sympathetic to Israel. What do you think of Israel's commentary then that the UN peacekeepers there are useless, that they effectively allowed Hezbollah to build its infrastructure under their nose? I think they've even implied that they're not really neutral at all. How do you feel as a former soldier, Israel, speaking of your former colleagues like that?
Well, if we want to be truthful about it, you know, Hamas were, and Hezbollah is in Lebanon. They're continuously building tunnels, and you know, the UN never steps in. You're observing, okay, and there's only a limited thing that you can do. And I understand there's a limited things that the UN can do, but they didn't do anything about it, and they haven't been doing anything about it. And that's call a spade here. We have Lebanon, and we have Hamas and Hezbollah and Lebanon. They've destroyed that country going back to the 70s. Lebanon was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful country.
It still looks, from the footage where it hasn't been flattened, it still looks it. And it's yeah. not just, there's people of all different religions living there as well, obviously.
Oh, there is, aye. But they have destroyed the country. They have destroyed it. If you look, go back in history, what Lebanon was in the 40s and 50s and 60s, and look at it now, okay, you're seeing back in the 70s and 80s, Beirut was destroyed.
All right, so you know, what is your views on Israel firing on UN peacekeeping positions as a former soldier then?
Well, you see, I don't really know whether they did or not. But
listen, I've respected everything you've said, and I've listened to you, yeah. Michael, right, and I haven't tried to contradict you, what have you. But as soon as I bring up something that's a fact that you maybe find difficult to answer, you can't then just say, start blaming the media and saying you don't know. You know an awful lot. I'm telling you right now, your former colleagues have said it too, Israel fired on UN positions, right? So as I say, treat me with the same respect I'm treating you. It did happen.
I won't treat you.
What's your views on that, Michael, with respect? And I am genuinely respect your view.
Well, if you call it a war zone or call it a conflict zone or call it whatever you want to call it, I don't want to see any Irish soldier or any UN soldier being involved in the Middle East conflict. You know, if it
Do you believe Israel were justified in firing on these UN positions?
I would say no. Yeah. I would say no.
And are there any other red lines that could be crossed in your view from what Israel, like, say for instance, if Israel goes after Iran's nuclear infrastructure, and who's to say, God forbid, it could trigger an all-out massive war in that part of the world, and I don't think anyone wants that. But would you support given the fact that Iran backs Hezbollah and Hamas, would you support Israel in bombing key infrastructure or even taking the leadership of Iran out?
Greg, that's all hypothetical. That's hypothetical. I'm not even going to give that an answer because it's all hypothetical.
Okay.
We know, and most people know, and observers that know that have been there, and people that have watched the conflict escalate over the years and years and years. And not be Israel. I'll be dealing with Iran, and we know that.
Mm-hmm.
We know who will be dealing with Iran.
Yeah.
And we're pretty sure of that. And The your previous commentator on, you know, alluded to that there, that would be America and, you know, their interest in the Middle East. And whatever we think about America or whatever, they're supposed to be the police men of the world, but that's a completely different topic altogether. But as far as I'm concerned, I do not think that Israel wants any conflict with the UN or with Irish peacekeeping forces.
But they obviously feel powerful and influential enough that they can effectively accuse the UN of standing by and actually facilitating Hezbollah building to the north of Israel. That's what they've said. You can read between the lines. It's as clear as day.
But they obviously feel
very empowered.
Yeah. What's the UN's mission in South Lebanon at the minute? Now it's observation. We all know this observation and monitoring. And Hezbollah were able to do, you know, build tunnels all over South Lebanon. And they weren't stopped. Nobody stopped them because all their mandate is observation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is. It isn't anything else. And it's to report what's happening, and that's exactly what it is.
Okay.
They didn't stop Hezbollah from building all the tunnels. Or sending rockets
but
from Lebanon
is it their
and
role,
Israel.
Though. But you also know that's not their role either. Their role is, I don't know if they reported it to the Security Council or not, but the role is not to say you can't dig a tunnel there. You know that from your experience of serving over there.
Oh, I do, yeah. But they've done it for years and years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's nobody stopped them. You know, and again, I'll say Israel's a right to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
How far they go, it's entirely up to them. I don't know.
Is there any level of, and this is my last question, I'll let you get back to your busy day, Michael. Is there any level of civilian deaths that you think is too much? Like, do you think, say, for instance, the leader of Hezbollah, if he decides to locate himself amongst 250 women and children because he thinks he's safe, Do you believe the Israelis are justified in dropping that bomb, probably signed by a US senator, dropping that bomb onto that space and taking out 250 children and women and men to take out that one Hezbollah leader? Is that justified in your view?
Well, is anybody? Can anybody else tell me what else they can do to protect themselves?
Okay, well, that's an open-ended question.
The question is now: do they want the whole state of Israel wiped out?
I hear you.
Is that what the people want?
Yeah, Michael. Listen, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Enjoyed talking to you. It's always good to get different perspectives, and somewhere within there lies a balance that might touch on what many people feel. Right, a few comments before 10. I'll catch up with the rest after. Seeing as Israel has a right to defend itself, why didn't the UK bomb Ireland out of it when the IRA were bombing England? Another fair play to you, Greg. When it comes to facts, no answer to the truth. Morning, Greg. Israel's taking the land belonging to Palestine, so what else can the Palestinian people do except fight to get their country back? Thank you, they say. Michael is condoning what Israel is doing. Israel's not allowed to defend themselves by killing innocent people. They're not allowed to enter Palestine or Lebanon as it's not theirs. This is an occupied territory that's facing oppression. But in the interest of balance, there was an encroachment into Israel October of last year. Over 1,000 people killed, many taken hostage. And I'm sure the Israelis would argue that since then and before then, there have been continuous drone and missile attacks from Lebanon. And the only way they can defend themselves is to create a buffer. As I say, I'm trying to be fair. That's what they would say. Regarding the October 7th attack on Gaza, how could this have happened to one of the biggest military organizations in the world? The Israelis have such high tech. Did this happen, or did Israelis let it happen so that they could retaliate? Well, a lot of people in that region, Israelis, didn't take part in the events to mark the one-year anniversary because there are some questions along the lines of that texter that they believe need answering. Back with more after the news and obituary notices.